my lips, touch their hearts. May you be glorified. Ask in Jesus' name. Amen. It was not a cool, clear morning. It was not cool. It was not clear. And it was not morning. In fact, it wasn't anything that you would know. Moses talks about this in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. He says, "Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." It wasn't much, was it, right? How do you like this? Formless and empty and darkness. Friends, it wasn't anything, at least nothing that you would recognize. There was no light. There was no day, no earth, and no light. And that changed in an instant in a very interesting way. Genesis 1:3 tells us, "And God said, there be light. And there was light." If you know the Genesis account, you know that God spoke these things into existence. He spoke the light and the sky and the earth and everything into existence except what? You and some animals. With regard to you, well, he used his hands. With regard to some of the animals, he used his hands. Now, let me ask you, why did God use his hands to create you and speak everything else into existence? Why was that? How many of you work with your hands? You don't have to raise your hands. Just think about this. When I was a kid, I worked on construction. I would much rather speak a wall into existence than have to build it, right? Who wants to use their hands? So this raises the topic of the relative hierarchy of intelligence. How many of you are science fiction fans? How many of you like science fiction? Oh, I see a few. I see. Oh, we're getting more. Doesn't have to be books. Could be movies even. Well, when I was a kid, I loved to read science fiction. I still read science fiction books from time to time. And my favorite book, I think, it's hard for me to remember back that far, but my favorite book was this book called Battle on Mercury. Now, those of you that know anything about planets are saying, why would anyone battle over Mercury? I mean, give me a break. Mercury is this little planet. It's close to the sun. And the interesting thing about Mercury is that it shows the same face to the sun all the time. And, of course, that means it shows the other half away from the sun all the time. The result is this wonderful thing. You can see this heat map. This is in Kelvins, in case you're wondering. Where one side is so blazing hot that it melts metal. Metal runs. It's so hot. And the other side is so cold that it freezes oxygen. So why would anyone want to battle for that place? Well, think about this. If you've got the extreme hot on the one side and extreme cold on the other, someplace in between, there must be something that resembles normal, right? And thus the thesis of my book. This is, after all, science fiction, right? The humans would live in that little narrow belt on Mercury. The idea is that Mercury wobbles a bit, so that gave you sort of night and sort of day. Well, those of you who can confess, like me, that you are science fiction fans, you know about this idea of different life forms, different levels of intelligence. What's the highest level of intelligence in science fiction? The hierarchy of intelligence, I've got here, so what if you could type directly from your brain? I have to confess to you that when I learned to type, I'm a touch typist, I learned on a typewriter. Yeah. These things are in the Smithsonian now, right? I mean, who sees a typewriter anymore? Well, when computers came out, I was an early adopter, and I used voice dictation. It was frustrating then. It's frustrating now. I was just dictating something on my iPhone, and belief comes as believes. Ah, it's never right. But isn't it much easier to be able to speak the words onto the screen as opposed to typing them down? Now, imagine, Cindy, that you could just think them onto the screen. Wouldn't that be the highest form of intelligence? And when you think about science fiction, isn't this the highest form? You just telecommunicate. You just communicate. Margie knows what I'm thinking, and I know what Margie's thinking, right? We just communicate that way. We don't have to speak. Lower forms of intelligence speak. So why is it that God used words? He's the intelligence of the universe. He's as smart as they get. Why wouldn't he use the highest form and just think us into existence? The light and the air and the sky and the day. I've been studying and teaching the Bible for more than 40 years. It's amazing. I used to always be the youngest guy in the courtroom. Now I'm often the oldest guy in the courtroom. Well, my years of studying the Bible have taught me that there are certain things in the Bible, I just sort of bump into them, and I say, ah, that's neat, that's interesting, that's a mystery, I'm not sure I understand it. And one of the things that's mysterious to me, special, in the Bible is light. Do you remember what you see in the Bible? Some angelic being comes up and, you know, rushes into the scene and just bangs into a human being to talk to them. And what does the human being do? They fall over. They can't stand the light. Or some of the times where God is in the scene, they're not actually seeing God, they're just seeing God's glory. And, you know, humans just can't stand that. They fall down. They can't stand seeing. Well, why is that? Why is the light connected with heavenly beings so powerful that humans can't stand to be in its presence? Is that the way it is in heaven? They can't stand to be in each other's presence? It seems to me, this suggests logically, that the light in heaven is much brighter than it is here on earth. This is one of these things I think I will see when I'm in heaven. I will find that light is much more intense up there. If you look at science indicates that if you have more intense light, it makes things more beautiful. And so I think part of the beauty of heaven is we have this incredibly intense light. And you, in your new body and your new eyes, will have absolutely no problem handling the light. You won't be falling back from those who live there because you will live there and you will experience the same kind of light. So that's one of the mysteries. I'm not sure light is special, and I think it's because it's brighter in heaven. Another special thing is grape juice, wine, grapes. When I preached about Samson a number of months ago, remember, angel said he's supposed to take the Nazirite vow. He's supposed to be a Nazirite. The Nazirite vow said this. You couldn't drink grape juice, couldn't drink wine, couldn't eat grapes. You might say, well, why is that? You know, why would you not drink grape juice? Why would you not drink milk? I mean, this is just, you know, garden variety stuff. I'm not going to get into the distinction or the controversy about whether we're talking about wine or grape juice, because if you're a wine, you could say, oh, I get it. We don't want this guy to grow up to be a wino, right? We don't want him to be drunk all the time. But friends, they couldn't eat grapes. And so there was something special about grapes. Do you remember in Jesus' Last Supper, Jesus says to his disciples, remember, they're drinking the wine and eating the bread, communion, right? And Jesus says to them, I'm not going to drink this until I come again. Why is that? There's obviously something special about grape juice, about wine. There's something special about it. It's a mystery. I don't understand what it is, but there's something special. And the third area of mystery, there are more, is words. And that's what I want to talk with you about today. The mystery of words. Remember in the Gospel of John, starts out in the beginning, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God? Why would you call Jesus the Word? Of all the things you could call him, why would you call him the Word? People hadn't seen God before. They didn't know God, right? I mean, they had read about him, maybe had dreams or visions, but people did not really see God. So what was Jesus? Jesus was God made incarnate. Words became substance. This idea of God became substance, a real live person. Just like in creation, where God speaks, and what? His words become substance. And so this idea that words become substance begins to help us to unravel this mystery. Words become substance. Look what James says. He likes to talk about words. We're going to stick with James for a little bit. James 3, 4 to 5. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body. James says, your tongue is like a rudder. And rudders are interesting because they are small, but hey, they turn big boats in a driving wind. And so I want you to look at my favorite sport. I love to sail. I used to own a catamaran. In fact, if you look at this one right here, oh, look at this. The red doesn't work on the screen. Lower left-hand picture. I think they actually have pictured the same brand of catamaran I used to own. You see the rudder there? You can see that the rudder is not very wide, maybe 6 inches. It's very small compared to the entire length of the boat, right? This is, of course, on a trailer. That's the way it's supposed to be in the water. But when you're in the water, you know, and the wind is really blowing and the sailboat is bouncing over the top of the wind, this is exciting. I will tell you, I can frighten you, I can frighten myself. When you're sailing a cat, they just go much faster than normal boats. It's like sailing a Corvette. Man, that thing will roll. But the thing is this, friends, when it's in the water and you've got hold of the tiller and you turn just a little bit, it's just like power steering. No problem whatsoever. It's so easy to turn with this little rudder. Well, look to the right side, lower right-hand picture. You see that? That's a rudder straight back there. Now, they've got it like that because it's sitting on the grass. But you know what? Every one of these catamarans, at least every one that I'm familiar with, has a safety device. Your rudder is sticking down in the water lower than anything else, right? What if you hit a sandbar? What if you hit a log? Do you want the boat to just suddenly stop and toss you out? Or more likely, tear out the back of the sailboat or rip the rudder? It is a safety device. But I got to tell you, when the rudder kicks out like that, you ever driven a car that had power steering and then you lost the power steering? That's what it's like. All of a sudden, you can barely turn the boat. The rudder's not in right. The rudder's not set right. You see on the top where the guy's got the hull out of the water? It's called flying a hull. Extraordinary fun. But even though you get it high enough that you have the one rudder out of the water, the other rudder is sufficient to sail the boat, steer the boat with absolutely no problem. James has it exactly right. Just as these rudders are like power steering in a sailboat, so somehow your tongue is power steering in your life. Look what James says about this. James 3:6. The tongue also is a fire, a whirl of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person and sets the whole course of his life on fire. You thought that your words would change others, right? Linda is a presenter, right? She talks to people and she persuades people, right? Jonathan, he works out harmonious relationships and resolves problems, right? He can change others. You say, my tongue, I can set a person on fire. I can insult them, get them all angry and upset. Or I can compliment them and they'll feel great. And I can persuade them to a certain point of view. Do you notice that James is saying just the opposite? He's not talking about your words changing others. James is saying the tongue is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person. Your words corrupt you and sets the whole course of his life on fire. Your words can set the course of your life on fire. Have you ever heard the expression, he drives like his hair is on fire, he does something like it's on fire? I mean, it's not a compliment, is it? You know, do you want your life on fire? Of course you don't. James says your tongue will reset the course of your life in a way that is very unfavorable to you. Listen to what Lisa says, Lisa Hayes. Be careful how you are talking to yourself because you are listening. Yeah. James says, your tongue sets you on fire, alters the course of your life. So you are listening to yourself. So let me ask you, have you listened to yourself lately? I tend to be negative, but that's just my personality. I get depressed a lot. I'm not important. I have to tell it like it is. I can't learn to be polite and have emotional intelligence. And then this classic from my wife's youth. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I'm going out and eating worms. There are other stanzas to this, equally attractive. So imagine this. If your words change you, look at what you're saying to yourself. I'm negative. I'm depressed. I'm not important. I can't deal reasonably with other people. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. Friends, are you setting your life on fire by what you are saying? Imagine that you're praying to God to help you with some problem, some difficulty in life. And at the same time you're praying to God, you are speaking just the opposite to yourself, telling yourself that you are what it is you want God to cure in your life. James 3:6 again. The tongue corrupts the whole person and sets the whole course of your life on fire. Ellen White talks about this in The Desire of Ages. She's giving a commentary on Matthew 12:22. And if you look at Matthew 12:22, you'll see that Jesus comes upon a demon-possessed guy who is blind and he can't speak. There's a great life, right? Demon-possessed, and you can't see, and you can't speak. And Jesus comes to him and, what, heals his sight, casts out the demon, and I assume allows him to speak. And the Pharisees are standing around, and this is a no-kidding-around miracle. I mean, this is a no-joking miracle. And the Pharisees see themselves as being in competition with Christ, and so they're saying to themselves, hey, this is not good. The competition is doing some amazing things. What can we say to diffuse the power of what Jesus has done? And if you continue reading in Matthew 12, they say, he did this by the power of the demons. He did this by the power of Beelzebub. Ellen White says, they knew that wasn't true. They didn't believe that. That's the logical conclusion. They had heard him speaking, teaching, healing. They knew he wasn't doing this to advance the kingdom of Satan. He was doing this to advance the kingdom of God. But she said this. Once they said it, they were listening, and they came to believe their own false charges. How else could you justify the ultimate activity of the Pharisees? They were out there to kill Christ. They were out to murder God. My word, even if they thought he was a rabbi and not God, you wouldn't want to be doing that. They convinced themselves and set the course of their lives on fire. Friends, words become substance. Just like in creation, just like Jesus was substance, So your words become substance in your life. And so the first part of my message to you is pay attention to what you are saying to yourself. Well, let's go to the second part. I think all of you agree with the saying, prayer is the key that unlocks all the doors. What you say to God can change things. Look at Matthew 5:45. This is the minimum wage of the universe rule. Matthew 5:45. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Matthew says that whether you're good or bad, God has sort of a minimum level of blessings, the minimum wage of blessings, that everybody gets. Everyone gets rain, we get sun, and we get to breathe, and we get these other blessings, right? Doesn't matter whether you're good or bad, God blesses everyone in this minimum way at least. But look at what James says, getting back to James. James 4:2. He says, you do not have because you do not ask God. If you're a Christian, if you're an insider, you don't have to be satisfied with the minimum level of blessings. You can ask God for the solution to whatever problem is that faces the problem is that faces you, whatever the difficulty is, whatever causes you to fear, you can have more, and you don't have more because you don't ask. You're not asking. Look at this. Mark 11:23. I tell you the truth. This is Jesus speaking. If anyone, what? Says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will happen, it will be done for him. Hey, your words can move mountains. Now you may say, what silliness is this? Why would I want to move mountains? We don't have mountains in Virginia Beach other than Mount Trashmore. I don't want to move that. So why would I want to do that? Well, think about the early history of the country. People are heading to California. They all wanted to go to California. They didn't know what they'd find when they get there, right? I mean, we know, you know, you really don't want to go there, right? Sorry, couldn't help riffing on California. So, but what was keeping them from going to California? Mountains. Friends, Jesus isn't talking about something arbitrary. He is talking about the challenges and the difficulties in your life. What causes you to fear? Is it a health challenge? Is it a job challenge? Is it a relationship challenge? What is it that creates problems and difficulties in your life? Jesus says, James says, speak to your mountains. Speak to your mountains. You speak to those mountains, and they will move. You see, once again, words become substance. If you don't share those words with God, you don't pray those things, you're not going to have them. You're not going to have them. And so, friends, do you see the importance of words in your life, expression in your life? What you say changes you, and what you pray changes your word, your world. It changes the surroundings in which you find yourself. Friends, words become substance. And so, what I'd like you to take away from this sermon is this. Be intentional about what you say. Realize how what you say impacts you. Be intentional about your prayers. Realize that God may not be sharing something with you simply because you have not asked Him. So be intentional about what you say and what you pray. Thank you.
I'm going to have you guys stand up again with me. I know everybody sings more loudly when they stand up, so. the grave could conceal him no longer. One day the stone rolled away from the door.
Cognizant of our words, how they become substance in our life, and our prayer life that can become substance in dealing with the problems and hopes and aspirations of every one of us. Bless everyone here, dear Lord. Keep them safe through this coming week.